Please listen carefully.
You are listening to the Ardent Development Podcast. I'm Ron Smith.
And I'm Derek Hatchard. Whatever your role in the software development industry, join us in our search for inspiration and insights for builders and leaders.
Go to ardentdev.com to find more interviews and subscribe by email. Follow us on Twitter at ardentdev. Welcome to the Ardent Development Podcast. I'm Ron Smith.
And I'm Derek Hatchard. Today, we're talking with Chloe Condon. Chloe is a former musical theater actress and Hackbright Academy graduate, and she is now a developer evangelist at Sentry. She is perhaps the only engineer you'll meet, I think the only one that I know, who has been in Hairspray, Xanadu, and Jerry Springer, the opera. She is passionate about bringing people with non-traditional backgrounds into the world of tech. If you're trying to place her face, she is the woman giving the thumbs up at the in the What It's Like to Be a Woman at a Tech Conference article, which she wrote. I found that on Medium. It might be other places. Chloe can correct me in a second. And a quick Google search for her will tell you that she has a series of Getting Started with Docker videos. You can find some theater reviews that she's on, tech blogs, and I think the hilarious videos of her singing. So have fun after the show with that. Chloe, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So Chloe, you're a developer evangelist at a company called Sentry, and some of us have bumped into plenty of developer evangelists in our time. But for those listening who don't really know what that role is, could you unpack it for us? What is it? What do your days look like? Just tell us a little bit about what that experience is like.
Sure. So it's kind of funny. Usually when I tell people who aren't familiar with the role, they say, oh, is that a religious thing? And my answer is usually, well, in a sense. But basically, I call myself an extroverted engineer. And my title, I go by developer evangelist. Other people go as DevRel, developer advocate. There's a lot of different flavors and varieties of us. So personally, I got into the evangelism space because I have a non-traditional background. I come from the theater world. And when we were presenting our projects at Hackbright, I discovered pretty quickly, like, oh, wow, nobody likes to do public speaking. This is very interesting. So that's kind of part of what I do. So oftentimes I will go to conferences and I will speak about various thought leadership topics. Right now I'm doing a lot of stuff around the error logging, you know, metrics space. In my previous role, I did a lot of Docker evangelism. So it's a combination of a couple of things. It's speaking, it's writing content. So a lot of the times when you see tutorials or walkthroughs on different websites, that's often made by me and our content person, doing everything from case studies to writing code examples for different integrations and features that we have. I'm organizing our meetup. That's going to be a monthly meetup starting in January. So it really depends. What I like about it a lot is my role changes every single day. Just looking at my calendar next week, I'm like breaking it down and seeing, okay, I'm writing this thought leadership blog, and then all day Thursday we're filming all around the city for our meetup. We're doing a promotional video for our meetup. We just published the 12 Days of Integrations GIF blog posts. We call ourselves very GIF positive here at Sentry. Every new employee gets a welcome GIF, but we featured all of our integrations over the 12 days leading to the holidays, which involved having our different engineers hold up different ornaments with the logos of our integrations in them. So there's some really fun kind of theatrical aspects of my role, but a lot of it requires this pretty deep understanding of technology in our product and being able to code. So I definitely went a more non-traditional route as a first role in the software engineering role or world, I should say. But I felt that it very much aligned with my past. So now I'm here.
So the very first developer evangelist that I ever met was a guy at Microsoft years and years ago. And at the time, he wouldn't use the term developer evangelist when he was going out around Canada, because everyone would look at him and like, what are you talking about? what is that even? But what's interesting is that there is a fair bit of showmanship involved in it. So I can see how it'd be such a good fit given that you have a performance background. I think that's really cool. Do you run into the misconception that because you're a developer evangelist or you work in developer relations or developer marketing that you're not technical or you're not a real engineer? Do you run into that bias?
You know, I think a lot of it is mental for me, since I am, in a sense, still very junior, because I only graduated from my boot camp a year ago. No one's ever blatantly said that to me, but I think the voices in my head say that. I usually do not recommend to boot camp grads to jump right into evangelism, just because I think it's very valuable to get the time in the trenches and like get that time to really understand the pain points and the workflows of engineers. So I really had to put it on myself my first year to make sure that I was coding every day, that I was touching some sort of technology, if be that writing about it or blogging about it. Obviously, in my last role, it was very Docker focused, and now I'm learning all about this new space of error tracking and metrics and logging. So yeah, I think that a lot of it is mental and imposter syndrome, but there's always so much to learn. And with Sentry in particular, we support basically every language. So my boot camp, the curriculum was mostly Python and JavaScript. So when I go to something like RubyConf, or if I go to something like PHP conference, I obviously know how to code and I can hold my own, but I haven't touched a lot of PHP. So a lot of that is, I spend a lot of my free time kind of dabbling in those languages, use a lot of resources like Code School and Team Treehouse. But yeah, I would say there are definitely evangelists out there who are very technical. My role sits on the marketing team, which is pretty typical with the developer evangelist or DevRel role. But I think that it's mostly imposter syndrome for me. I have to take a step back and kind of calm myself down.
One of the things that that always impresses me with a good developer evangelist is how broad they tend to be. So I worked for Salesforce for a number of years, and I was at Dreamforce 1 year, and just walked up to one of the hallway demo presentations, and someone from the developer marketing team was up, and I mean, they were using at least a dozen different technologies in their little 15 or 20 minute lightning talk, and it just blew my mind at how much breadth and how sort of little credit they get for being able to speak intelligently about so many different things. And it's similar to what you said, like the ability to go and represent your product and your developer tools to people who work in many different languages is a really special skill set. There's a lot of developers that I've known who that is the complete opposite of what they even want to do. They say, I know Java, just leave me alone, and I'm going to program in Java. And I'm going to do this for the next 15 years.
And I think there's really something to be said as well. And obviously my theater background helped a lot with this how many times have you seen a talk or watched a tutorial video that is just so monotonous? And it's not the speaker's fault. Like, they are a brilliant engineer, but they don't know how to present material. So something like unique that I kind of bring to this space is, hey, I've been performing since I was 4 years old. Both of my parents were in the theater. I think it was sort of a shock to come to the world of engineering and technology and go to product announcements and conferences and watch people talk about fascinating things that I couldn't listen to because we are so excited to present. It blows my mind because I'm, like I said, I'm very junior still, and people say, wow, that was one of the best talks I've ever seen. And I'm like, thank you. I don't think it was necessarily the best talk you've ever seen. It's just that I know how, I have presentational skills. That's just something that I've been doing my whole life.
When I was preparing to interview you, Chloe, I found your Docker video that you had done on YouTube. And, I could have used that a year ago when I went researching on Docker. I was working with a team and they were debating whether they would start using it or not. And there was very little material that was out there that was at kind of a beginner introductory level. And you made me laugh about 10 times through it. And it was a very good video. I liked it quite a bit. It's good.
Thank you. I think it's funny because I am so used to being this performer on stage. I mostly did musical comedies. And so I was putting all these like jokes in my presentation to kind of like get people awake, because a lot of times your talks are either really early in the morning or really late at night. And now I've had to preface my talks during my intro and say, hey, it's okay to laugh. Like, please laugh. I'm making jokes. Because the technical audience is very different. They internalize a lot of things. And I have to remind myself that even as a performer, when I go and watch other performers, I'm very stoic and I rarely laugh even if I think something's funny. So, but encouraging people to, you know, interact and I think helps a little bit and helps keep people awake.
Keep pulling on that thread. Coming from a theater background, can you compare and contrast sort of the culture? I'll call them industries. I don't know if that's fair to use, but just what do you see that's similar? What is radically different?
Yeah, I think, you know, the first thing that comes to mind, well, obviously I left the theater world because I was not getting paid enough for the amount of work that I was doing. You know, I would, the main difference and kind of what led me to tech was you can do theater your entire life and work hard and pound the pavement and audition and audition and, you know, take acting classes and go to school for it and get a master's and you can be the most talented person in the world. But if you are not, you know, 5'3" with brown hair, it's all about look and it's very much out of your control. Whereas in the technology world, like the amount of work that you put in, you really get back. And that was sort of mind blowing for me to realize because I can't tell you how many talented people I know have been acting their entire life. They moved to New York, no success. And that's not for lack of trying. I mean, this is just pure, it's a field that involves a lot of luck, a lot of good timing. So I actually got interested in technology because my boyfriend is an Android developer. And when I was first thinking about going to a boot camp, he said, oh, let me introduce you to some other women who've gone through boot camps that I know from my network. And my immediate reaction was, oh my gosh, they're not going to want to talk to me. Like that, this is a competitive industry. Like, why would they want to talk to me? Because in the acting world, if I took another woman out to coffee, she would, of course, say, you know, here's the places you should audition, but don't take my part. You know, it's a very competitive industry. Whereas, oh my gosh, everyone in the engineering world is like, oh, please, please come. Like, we need more women. We need more people. We need more junior engineers. So it's a very different industry in not only kind of the need for talent, but also it's a different world. I mean, my boyfriend constantly reminds me that my degree, like my BA, is in drama. And I think there's a reason it's called drama. There are a lot of dramatic things that go on, as we're seeing from the Harvey Weinstein stuff that's happening right now. And that's very common in the theater industry. So I think there is a lot of crossover. The one kind of similarity but different thing that I always point out to people is there are so many women in theater. Like, if you're a man who wants to do musical theater, like, you will get cast. There is such a lack of men. Whereas in the tech industry, there are not a lot of women. And it's very rare to have a line for the bathroom. Whereas you do a you know, musical theater show in San Francisco and the women's dressing room is packed full, whereas the men's dressing room has two guys in it. So I would say the biggest thing for me is just the mentorship and the community aspect around it has just been so warm and welcoming. If you reach out to anyone for coffee or to pick their brain on a technology or even just turn to the engineer who sits behind you, I know I do that all the time at Sentry. Everyone is so willing to help and everybody wants you to succeed, which is so refreshing coming from this very competitive, you know, cutthroat acting industry.
That is fascinating. I'm wondering how much of that has to do with the nature of the people that are drawn to the work versus the current state of the market, where, you know, is acting kind of oversubscribed with talent and technology is still undersubscribed, or is it is there something inherently less competitive and more collaborative for amongst people who are drawn into tech? I don't have an answer. I don't expect you to have a firm answer, but speculate if you want.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I get a lot of parents who come up to me after I give, you know, technical talks because, you know, I walk on stage. I'm this very quirky 5'2" blonde musical theater girl with sparkle glasses who's giving a presentation on a technical subject, which doesn't happen very often. And the number one question that I get afterwards is, my son or daughter wants to get a theater degree. How do I get them interested in technology? Which is very funny to me because I've been there. Like, you don't want to squash your children's dreams. But at the same time, you know, I struggled a lot with this, especially when I first got, you know, started this journey to make the transition from theater to technology, I was very angry for a long time that I had this theater degree, because I looked at people like my boyfriend and a lot of our friends and a lot of my coworkers who were just such talented engineers who had been doing this since they were 4 years old. And, you know, I was doing Wizard of Oz the musical when I was 4 years old. So I had a lot of like kind of angst about that for a long time. But now that I'm in this industry and I've been in it a year, I see so many important things from my theater degree and from my life as an actress that I bring into my life as a developer evangelist. So it's hard for me to, you know, obviously if I meet a young woman and she tells me, hey, I want to get a theater degree, I'm going to say, oh my gosh, don't, like, please, like, learn a technical skill that'll be useful for you. But that being said, you know, that's kind of the beauty of these boot camps, right? Is people have a whole life before switching careers, and they bring expertise. Like, I was sitting on a panel yesterday at Hackbright where the woman next to me worked in fintech, in more of kind of a completely non-technical role, and then now works as an engineer, and she brings all this industry expertise. Or, you know, there's people who have been teachers who now work on technology software, and they really have that like inherent knowledge that an engineer who hasn't dabbled in that industry just isn't going to have. So yeah, I think part of it is just the arts are a luxury, and I think it's something that we treat ourselves to, and it does not pay as well. There is the Actors Union, of course, but when you take a look at salaries of Broadway performers, it was shocking to me, and no one ever sat me down as a kid or as a teenager or deciding about colleges and said, hey, do you know how much you would make as an actor? Like, let's break this down, because my dad is a playwright and a director, and my mother was a costume designer, and we had a very comfortable life, and I had never really thought about what that future would look like. So I think a lot of it is just it's a passion that we grow up with, but there's so many transferable skills. Even stage managers are now transitioning over to product managers, because it's the same role. It's the exact same role, but a creative industry versus a technical industry.
I have a friend and former colleague who has a master's degree in English, and he's a brilliant engineer, and he loves to, every time he finds somebody who has an arts background, he loves to point it out to me.
Yeah. Well, we always joke, even in the DevRel community and also in the engineering community, we could start a hell of a band and like do a DevRel musical if everybody like, oh, I play saxophone. Oh, I was in jazz band. Oh, I'm an actor. I'm an actress. I'm a playwright. There's so many people who come from that background, and it's fascinating to me.
It's really surprising to me how many musicians I've run into in my career in tech. There seems to be something about the way people's brains are wired that programming and music both seem to come naturally. I unfortunately do not have that inclination. I am as tone deaf as they come, but I know many, many people. I will sit and not clap because I can't keep a beat either, but I'll gladly listen to the band.
Okay. If you are interested in particular music and engineering, Catherine Myers did a talk at RubyConf that's, I think it was titled something like Mozart would have been an amazing engineer or something like that. And she is a opera singer turned engineer. And she talked about all the parallels between music and engineering. And it was absolutely fascinating. Would highly recommend checking it out.
That sounds fascinating. I am going to look at that. Okay, so before we run out of time, I wanted to talk a little bit about error logging and reporting. I think to do that, we'll need a quick explanation of what Sentry is, as sort of the company and the open source tech, and then I'd love to just hear a little bit about how that is making developers more productive or how it's making their systems more stable.
Yeah, absolutely. So Sentry is an open source error tracking product that helps developers monitor and fix crashes in real time. Basically, you're going to be able to iterate continuously. You can boost your efficiency and definitely kind of improve your user experience. And the way that I kind of explain this to people, because the number one question I get at our booth is, well, can I just use my logs for that? Well, logs are a really great tool. They're kind of like the scrapbook or the history report of what's going on in your app. And you can set up alerts in your logs, but how do you know what's going to happen? How do you know other than a user tweeting at you and saying, you know, hey, this feature is broken if something's going wrong? You also have metrics, of course, and metrics are very useful to have a dashboard to see, oh, you know, this line is going up very steadily, maybe we should check that out. But your dashboard is only going to monitor the things that you have set up. So how do you know about those things that are just totally out of the blue? Users in Australia are all facing this issue when they do this particular mouse click, and you know, maybe this user used an emoji and now it's throwing an error. So what we do is we alert you when those things are happening in real time. So you can kind of think of us as more of a system that uses the power of your logs and the power of your metrics to keep your engineers informed. And then you can delegate those tasks and say, hey, you know, what's going on here? Is this fixed? Awesome. You can ignore them if it's a known issue. So it's really kind of keeping you aware of what's going on in your app for all of those kind of edge cases and situations that you haven't prepared for. Everything from a 404 error to people are running into an issue. I mean, this is the difference between someone using your app and a competitor's app. If they can't log into your system, you need to know that that's happening. So yeah, that's a little bit about us. We're also open source. So a lot of people have either touched our product or contributed to our product in some way. And you can go online. It's two lines of code to use it. And it's pretty great.
And I'm going to ask you some 101 questions here. Is this doing anomaly detection on error messages? Or is it like, give me the next level deeper around how this works.
Yeah, sure. So basically, this is going to give you all of the information so you don't have to blindly guess of what's going on. So the crash reporting is going to give you anything from the browser the user was using, the operating system. You can do feature flags. You can have breadcrumbs in there. And it's going to group all of the similar ones together so you know when there's a big, you know, spike in this. The thing that I always like to say is, you know, it's never fun to get those angsty tweets from, you know, a user who says, hey, this is broken. We would much rather take care of that ahead of time so no one is running into that issue. So you can really understand the bigger picture and get that real-time insight immediately. You can get the alerts via email or SMS. It's just kind of this way that you can really have an eye on your application 24/7.
Okay, and at the risk of sounding like a commercial when I ask you this, but this I am curious. What is the difference for teams if they use the open source project versus if they come to Sentry, the company?
Yeah, sure. So basically, you can totally use us for free, 10K events per month. That's with one user, like a 7-day history. And then I think once you get to about like the smaller package, it's unlimited users for, I think, $29 a month with a 90-day history. We also have free trials online. If you're doing it yourself, it's self-hosted. Obviously, if you're doing it with us, we're hosting it for you. So it really depends on what your needs are. Obviously, if it's more of a, you know, a side project that you're hacking on and you want to get an idea of the errors that are coming through, very easy to just self-host. Once you get a little bigger and you want weekly reports and, you know, basic SSO and kind of these on-demand events, and in addition to all the core features, that's kind of where we come into play and can help a little bit more with that. But we started as just a tiny bit of open source, and we're very passionate about keeping it open source. So yeah, it's really fun because it's rare with a product where, especially as an evangelist, you go out in the field and not only has someone heard of you, but they say, oh, that's in my app right now. Like, we're using Sentry. We love Sentry. So yeah, it's fun to have so many people touch it because of that open sourceness.
That's awesome. Okay, thank you for that. That's helpful. Yeah. That's sentry.io if anyone wants to find that. This has been really interesting, Chloe. Thank you for your time.
Of course.
We let you go, can you tell our listeners where they can find you on the internet?
Yes. You can search my name. I'm at Chloe Condon on most things, except for Instagram. I'm at unslotherized, like an unauthorized sloth. and yeah, I've had taken a little break from writing, but I'm starting back up now over the holidays. So definitely follow me on Medium if that's your jam. And I tweet about all kinds of quirky engineering things and theater things on the Twitter sphere. So, yes.
All right. Well, very cool. Thank you so much for your time. This has been great.
Thanks, Chloe. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Ardent Development Podcast. Be sure to visit us at ardentdev.com for the show notes, including links to the books and resources mentioned. And don't forget to sign up for email notifications so that you're the first to know about new episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter at ArdentDev. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review on iTunes as it helps other people discover the podcast. Thanks for listening.